Welcome everyone, my name is David Greenwalt with Leanness Lifestyle University, and today I have a very special guest on the phone all the way from London. His name is Andy Puddicombe, and he is the co-founder of a fantastic meditation company called Headspace. Andy, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Dave, and thanks very much for having me on.
Would you please just give my listeners a little background on yourself? Where's home, and how did you get into the field of meditation?
Sure. So home right now is in London, although next year we're actually moving over, we're relocating to the West Coast, to California, which we're very much looking forward to. In terms of how I got into meditation, I started very early on. I was very fortunate. My mum was interested in meditation. So I probably started about the age of 11 or 12. I didn't really take it up seriously, I guess, till my early 20s when I went off to the Himalayas to become a Buddhist monk. And over many years, I trained in meditation. And I came back to the UK probably about 8 years ago now to set up Headspace.
I'll be darned. So, well, first of all, one of the first things that stands out to me is you're moving from London to California, huh?
We are indeed, yeah.
Well, that's well, great. Well, yeah. Welcome to the United States. Is that your? Will this be your first time living here?
Actually, before I was a monk, I spent a couple of years. I used to coach a lot of sports. So, before I went away for my monastic training, I studied sports science at university, and I did a few years kind of on and off working down in Florida. So. I can't say I know America well. I've spent quite a bit of time in Florida, in New York, and over on the West Coast. But I'm very aware there's a very large piece in the middle that I've yet to visit.
Yeah, that's where I am. If you ever make it to the Midwest here, make sure that we find each other and have lunch or something, because I'm here in the Midwest.
Look, but whereabouts are you, Dave?
Illinois.
Okay.
Basically, think Chicago.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
I'd love to visit.
Absolutely. Okay. So our listeners are wanting to know everything that's on your brain, and I'm going to ask a lot of questions about meditation. So let's just start with a real basic one. What is meditation?
So I think actually the starting point for that is looking at two different words. I would use the word mindfulness and the word meditation together, and mindfulness helps to define what meditation is. So mindfulness I would describe as the ability to be present in the moment. So usually we're very sort of caught up with our thoughts, everyday life, and we're not really that present and engaged with what we're doing in life. And so we miss out on a lot of life. So it's not that easy to learn how to be present. Normally, most people experience that feeling maybe when, I don't know, they're listening to some music or watching a sunset, and it kind of flashes by, and there's that feeling of really connecting with either the people or the world around us. But it kind of comes and goes, and so we need some kind of skill or technique to train the mind how to rest effortlessly in that state throughout the day. And that's really what meditation is. It's just a technique, a skill, which trains the mind to be more present. And when we're more present, not only are we more engaged with life, but also hopefully we become a bit more open, a little less critical, judgmental. I think there's a lot of different things that come along with the practice of being present.
Okay, great. So mindfulness is kind of the gateway to understanding, you know, what we use to get mindfulness, or what we use to improve it, is the meditation.
Exactly that, yeah. So I would say mindfulness is being present, or having the ability to step out of all of the thinking mind, the overwhelming emotions, and actually experience life for what it is, rather than what we think it is.
Got it. Thank you. Is there are several different kinds of meditation, and what kind of meditation is Headspace based on?
Yeah, so I mean, I would say there are probably thousands of different types of meditation. I think all meditations, no matter what the tradition or culture, the heritage of the meditation, they all have a few sort of things in common. And at Headspace, obviously, having trained as a Buddhist monk, they draw very heavily on the techniques that are used within the Buddhist traditions. But I would say that at the heart of the techniques, they have these kind of core qualities that actually are central to every type of meditation. On the one hand, there's the quality of the sort of calming the mind, the settling it down, quietening the mind. And at the same time, there's this other quality of sort of insight. So having the ability to watch the mind, not being too engaged with it, not getting too caught up in it, having the ability to step back and actually to watch thoughts and feelings come and go. But no matter what the type of meditation, we always need some kind of, unless you have a lot of experience, usually need some kind of sort of focal point. At a Headspace, we tend to use the breath as that. So the idea is that you use the breath. It's always there. Or at least we hope it's always there. And so we can always return to that. Whenever we realize we get distracted, just coming back to the breath again. So using the breath as a vehicle of focus, but really kind of using those two elements of calming the mind on the one hand whilst gaining a sense of insight at the same time.
Great. Yeah. In using your meditation program, really focusing on that breath does make a tremendous difference. And for someone new to this, I think that they will be surprised at just how calming that is. But it's really great. So, okay. So can anyone learn to meditate, or is it only certain people?
No, you know, I think anyone at all. I don't know, on the website we have hundreds of thousands of people that have done it. I see people at a clinic who are referred for this stuff and have done a lot of events, you know, and I've only ever met one person who genuinely couldn't do it, and they couldn't do it because they were kind of sort of mentally ill. So I think it's the way that it's taught and the way that it's approached is the key. I think most people come to meditation with the idea that it's all about kind of stopping thoughts. So if it's a person who has a very busy mind, a very active mind, and they're quite stressed all the time, then they tend to look at meditation and go, oh, no way, I could never do that. Like, I'm far too stressed. My mind's far too busy. Well, first of all, that's a very good reason to try meditation. You know? But it's always surprising for me when you get somebody to stop thinking about what they expect the meditation will be like and instead to actually just try it. And it's amazing how often even people who think they would never be able to do it get a really kind of positive experience, even first time around.
Well, thank you. There's just an amazing amount of research. You and I were talking before we started recording this call.
Yeah.
I've had my nose in the research of meditation for decades, and I'm only a recent practicer of meditation, only within the last year or so, which I don't say proudly. You know, I say that it's, I want to tell all my listeners, don't do what I did. Don't wait so long to do it, because it's really powerful and amazing, and it's one of the reasons I'm doing this interview with Andy. But there's a ton of research, and we can't get into it all, but generally speaking, why should someone meditate?
There are so many reasons. It's hard to know where to begin.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would say at the very beginning, you can look at this from lots of different ways. You can break it down into physical, emotional, and mental kind of benefits. You can look at it from a symptom sort of led thing. So, okay, that it's been shown to reduce anxiety, to reduce depression, to increase restful sleep, to decrease insomnia, to lower cholesterol, to increase heart health. I mean, the list just kind of goes on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
For me personally, far more important, all of those things are amazing. I think it's brilliant that the research is being done, and I think it's really inspiring for people as a means for picking up meditation and getting started with it. But I would see all of those things really as side effects. They're things that if we're meditating on a regular basis, those things just happen whether we like them or not. You know, it's not that you can, generally speaking, these science studies don't use a particular type of meditation specific to that symptom or that emotion. They use a generic type of meditation, a bit like we use at Headspace, sort of a mindfulness type of meditation. So these things kind of just happen anyway. They're like wonderful side effects of meditating. I would say that the core motivation for learning to meditate is being able to get a greater sense of perspective in life, having a greater sense of contentment in our life, but probably more important than that even is enhancing the relationships in our life. Like, so often meditation is seen as a very self-orientated, even goal-orientated type of pursuit. But obviously none of us live kind of independently, and the relationships in our life are so important, and the only way we can truly be there for the people around us in our life is if we are present, if we're not so caught up in our own stuff the whole time, that we can actually be there for them. And I've just seen such amazing transformations in relationships that for me, that is one of the biggest motivating factors of meditation.
Someone listening and who either may have a little bit of experience with meditation or is relatively new to it and may have just maybe heard some form of guided meditation may wonder something like this. The relationship part, I absolutely agree with you. There's nothing more valuable, more precious in our lives than our relationships with people. But one of the things that might come to mind is the meditation exercise definitely helps bring you increased mindfulness and into the moment. How does that transfer into the periods when we're not taking a 10-minute meditation? You know what I mean?
It's a really good one, and I think very often it's meditation's misunderstood in that way, in so much as it's presented as something very isolated from the rest of our life. You know, it's like, you know, you go to work and you get really, really stressed out, and then you think, oh, what can I do? Oh, I'll do some meditation, and okay, you feel better, and then you carry on with life again, almost as though it's a kind of aspirin or something.
Right.
And I think you can use it in that way, but that's fine. But I think it's undervaluing the potential of it, because every time we sit down and practice meditation, what we're doing is familiarizing ourselves with what it feels like to be in the present moment. The more we do that, the more we start to be present throughout the day. The more present we are throughout the day, when it comes back around to the meditation again, the easier, the quicker we sort of settle in to that sense of being present again. So there's this kind of relationship between the two which is inseparable. Hopefully, through the process of meditation, we also become a little less reactive. So normally in the mind, you know, like a thought appears and we think, okay, either I must do that or I mustn't do that. And we become very reactive to it. But when you sit and you watch the mind in meditation, you see all these thoughts kind of coming and going. There's a sort of space there, and rather than reacting to the thoughts or indulging the emotion, there's a slightly more sort of responsive state. So I would say in everyday life, that starts to kind of seep out even, you know, we start to respond in a calm and considered way rather than reacting in a very sort of knee-jerk kind of way.
That's super interesting. You know, in one of the classes I teach, I teach the difference between responding and reacting, believe it or not.
And, oh, really?
And one of the analogies I give is that typically when it comes to medicine, for example, if we say that someone is having a reaction, most people will think of that as quite negative. You know, somebody's having a reaction to the medicine. But if we say that someone is responding to the medicine, then most people will look at that
very
and say,
true.
You know, oh, that's great that they're responding to the medicine. So we definitely teach here at Leanness Lifestyle methods and strategies that can help improve that so that we are responding rather than reacting.
Yeah.
So that's great. Really, so that's awesome that it supports that.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, how about benefiting weight loss specifically? That's who I primarily work with. So how can meditation help people that are interested in shedding body fat who have may have been struggling with nutrition or exercise or other lifestyle components?
Yeah. Well, I actually wrote, I don't know, I've written a couple of books, but my last book was called The Headspace Diet, and you'll be pleased that it's not a diet book in the traditional sense of the faddish diet books. It's more about getting back to the original idea of diet and having a very... I guess what I would describe as a very sane relationship with food. I think for so many people, there's almost a neurotic relationship with food. And it's maybe it's a little bit like watching a pressure cooker or something like that. You know, it's people go on a diet thinking that they must eat a certain way, must behave a certain way, when actually the thought isn't reflecting the underlying feeling. So there's this tension that's created in the mind. The feeling is, I want to have a bar of chocolate. But then there's this thought going, I can't have it, I mustn't. And it kind of builds up, and it builds up until eventually kind of the diet sort of crashes, the person binges, and they end up putting back on all the weight that they've just kind of lost. And this cycle kind of continues the whole time. And there's some really interesting research that shows that when people are actually kind to themselves rather than very strict and critical of themselves, actually they tend to lose more weight, and they tend to find it easier to follow sort of patterns of behavior around nutrition. So there was probably about 5 years ago in the U.S., I don't remember which university, but it was a fantastic pilot study that was done that showed that after just a few weeks, I think it was 4 weeks, of meditating 20 minutes a day, the number of binges was decreased by between 50 and 70% in just 4 weeks of meditating 20 minutes a day. So it was alongside sort of some sound nutritional advice. These people weren't dieting in a very strict way, eating healthily, but simply giving these people the ability to be present so that when they felt the desire to binge or to follow through with some kind of craving, they had that ability to make the choice in the moment, to see the thought and to think, actually, you know what? I don't want to engage with that. And to take a different line. And that's very different from kind of suppressing the thought or trying to resist it in some way, which only leads to more conflict in the mind.
Absolutely. It's great. It definitely coincides with other teaching that we do too, to become more aware, more conscious, and more mindful of the thoughts and not be so judgmental of ourselves when we're having those thoughts as abnormal or in any negative way. Absolutely. Very, very interesting. Thank you for sharing that. Well, you know, when it comes to meditation, do I need a teacher?
Yeah, I think that the world's changing in that way. You know, when I started meditating, to begin with, I thought I could learn from a book. And I found quite quickly, actually, I needed a bit more than that. I needed to hear some advice on the kind of things that I was struggling with. And so for me, I decided to go away and find a teacher. I think as the internet develops, as things change, there are more and more resources where we can actually take it to a really good level, you know, a very sustainable level. A level which will help us to sustain our physical, emotional, and mental health. I think that's absolutely doable. I think for people who are looking for enlightenment, so something beyond just a good sense of everyday contentment and happiness, then probably yes. You know, a teacher is absolutely necessary.
Well, and I guess I want to qualify that too, and have you just, you know, what kind of teacher do we need? Do we have to go see someone? What, you know, or what's an example of a method that, you know, provides us with a teacher, so to speak? Yeah, I know that's obviously the products you have, and that's why we're talking, because I've used your products and I think they're great. So I want to make sure that people understand that, you know, they don't necessarily have to go and become a Buddhist monk, and they don't have to go, you know, and they don't have to go somewhere even in person.
Yeah, no, you can cancel your ticket to the Himalayas. unless you kind of want to make it your vocation in life, it's genuinely, and I can say, having been there and done it, it's absolutely not necessary, you know. So, for example, at Headspace, what I've tried to do is create, in fact, the co-founder of Headspace, Rich Pearson. So he came along to see me at the clinic to learn meditation one to one, and he said afterwards, he said, like, well, this is amazing, you know, like, this has had such a massive impact on my life. And he said, but this is just one to one, you know, how can we make this available for more people, you know? So we looked at, okay, how do we take that course of providing teaching in meditation, and how do we put it online or in an app? And so we basically found a way. We've done a 365-day course. So every single day, you start, even if you've never done any meditation before, you start on day one learning the basics, and you're led through a journey of different types of techniques. The focus changes. To begin with, it is the basics, and then it's looking at how can you be more creative? How can you have more harmonious relationships? How can you deal with particularly strong, challenging emotions that arise in the mind, or perhaps chronic pain in the body? And so day to day, you're getting, every single day is different. So it's not like just having a meditation CD that you put on and you just listen to the same thing every day. This is every day receiving a little bit more guidance, so that you really feel as though you have a teacher kind of present. And because we have a community on the website, if you have questions, send them in, and we're able to hopefully to help you out.
Well, it is a fantastic product, no doubt about it. Someone starting off may say, you know, like anything, they may be nervous about how long it's going to take to kind of learn the technique. You know, generally speaking, what's been your experience for how long it takes to learn?
Well, there's a reason that, so when you sign up either for the app or the website, there's 10 days for free, so you can try it. So doesn't matter whether you're nervous about it will or won't work, there's 10 minutes a day for 10 days, called Take 10. So it's a good opportunity to get a feel for it and see the impact it may have on your life. My experience has been that everybody is different. For most people, they see a noticeable difference within the 10 days. There's a reason that we've made it 10 days long, and that's that it covers pretty much 90% of people, I would say. So most people within that time would see some very positive benefits, even if it's only a greater sense of calm, having taken those things out. So a quietening of the mind, and perhaps, yeah, a greater sense of connectedness or presence.
Yeah, it is a fantastic way to start the 10-day free trial. And we'll get more into this a little bit later, because I've got more questions I want to ask about meditation. But I just want to tell everybody listening now that, you know, the 10-day is available, as we are all loving things these days, as a smartphone app. And the smartphone app is just fantastic. You've got it with you no matter where you are. And that's what I started with, was the smartphone app. So anyway, it's available there, and it's, you know, I highly recommend that to anyone listening. So, all right, more questions about meditation. So what's the difference between, someone says, you know what, I like to relax with a good book, or I do yoga, I don't need meditation. I relax in other ways, and I do yoga.
Yeah.
So what's the difference between meditation and regular relaxation and yoga?
Okay, well, the first thing to say is, usually when we think we're relaxing, there is a quality, a certain quality of relaxation in the mind. But It's a very particular type. Often when we're relaxing, we're reaching out and distracting ourselves. So, you know, when maybe you've had a difficult day or something and you sit yourself in front of the TV and you watch a program, it's kind of lazy TV, you know, and it's distracting and it feels mildly relaxing. But it's relaxing only in so much as it distracts us from what's going on in the mind. And when we turn the TV off afterwards, the thoughts are still there. We lie down on the bed and as soon as the head hits the pillow, all those thoughts are still there and we can't go to sleep. And so it's as though it's temporarily taken us away. But also more than that, I think even if we find something which genuinely does relax us and not just take us away, it doesn't necessarily bring us into the present moment. So often when we read a book, for example, it's wonderful. It can take our mind off to another place, fantasy, imagination, but it doesn't necessarily bring us that experience of being present. And almost certainly, it doesn't provide the two qualities of relaxation and alertness at the same time. So if you think about most of the times when you're relaxing, or maybe, I don't know, in the bath, the sauna, lying on the sofa, usually we lean a little bit too much towards relaxation and we might even fall asleep in those situations. So it doesn't have that other component of being alert and focused that meditation does. So meditation is not just about relaxation. Again, I would say relaxation is a side effect, a byproduct of meditation. It's about refining the balance between alert on the one hand and relaxation on the other.
Oh, it totally answered. It definitely. I love the way that you brought in the television aspect too, because so many people so many of my clients will say that they relax with television, and the thing about television. If we look at it, you know, from your perspective, and obviously from the idea of meditation, is it's almost the opposite. Because with meditation, the idea is to bring alertness and calmness into the present and to be present. Whereas television may be calming to an effect, but it's the opposite of being present. It's
absolutely.
Yeah, you're somewhere else. You're watching television, being entertained, or you're being whatever is going on the television. You are somewhere else, you know, as that's going on. Anyone who's ever, you know, tried to interrupt someone who is, you know, deeply engaged into a movie knows that it's kind of tough to get their attention. I think that's a great example. So what about someone who says, we'll go to someone else who says, I don't need meditation, I do yoga.
Yeah, okay, which is really interesting. And it comes back to that idea of mindfulness and meditation. I would say if you look at yoga as a complete system, it actually has eight limbs. It has kind of eight separate parts. And meditation is one of those eight. The type of yoga that most people are familiar with, the physical postures, that's another of those eight parts. So I would say meditation absolutely complements yoga, but it's not anybody who embraces yoga, the act of yoga, would recognize that the meditation is a complement to the physical practices rather than a replacement. So when we're engaged in those physical asanas or positions, there's undoubtedly a mindful quality to them. There's an emphasis on being present, with the breath, with the physical movement, aware of our thoughts and our feelings. But there is still an element of doing. Whereas when we sit to meditate, there is no sense of doing. Well, to begin maybe there's a little, but after some time, we kind of give up that sense of doing, and there is simply watching. So it's a subtle difference, but it's a very particular difference, quite an important one.
Well, thank you for that. And you know, as we kind of move on here, I know that some of these questions are very, you know, beginner, but I think that in introducing meditation to my listeners, it's important that we cover some of these basics. And then, you know, perhaps on an interview in the future, maybe we get into some areas that are a little more specific or focused on maybe, you know, one topic. But one of the things that I know crosses the minds of beginners a lot is, you know, they might think of meditation as religious. Is it religious?
There is nothing inherently religious about meditation. There's no question that it has been adopted and incorporated into religious faith, all religious faith, all over the world. But there is nothing inherently religious to meditation, which is why it can now be taught so easily in a secular way. It's why, I don't know, in the US, but in the UK, our National Health Service, you can actually go along to your doctor now, and they can prescribe meditation for you, you know. And there's no way in the UK they'd be able to do that, any religious kind of connotation to it. So I would say that you define meditation by how you choose to use it. You may choose to incorporate it into religious faith. It may be part of your spiritual well-being. It might be to help you with weight loss. It might be to help you focus in your exercise. It might be to concentrate at work, to stay well, stay healthy, to be happy. Ultimately, you define what it is by how you choose to use it.
That's great. All right, thank you for that. And next one, I know very basic, but we get in our heads, we think of meditation, we immediately might pop this into our head. Do I have to sit cross-legged on the floor?
Yeah, you'll be pleased to know you absolutely know. One of the many advantages of not packing your bags and heading off to a monastery or a nunnery is being able to sit on a chair. And so a headspace we always teach people, unless they've grown up sitting cross-legged on the floor, it's always best to begin to learn sitting on a chair. If you go on the website, there's some examples on there of exactly how to sit so that you can be comfortable. Most people assume, well, how hard can it be sitting on a chair, right? But actually, if we're leaning too far back and if the body's too horizontal, like in a big comfy armchair, then again, we'll probably end up falling asleep. Equally, if we're too kind of upright and tense, then it might not be a very relaxing experience. So it's about just finding a posture somewhere in the middle there where the legs and arms are uncrossed. And you just sat on an upright chair, alert but relaxed.
So is the sitting in the chair part versus, say, laying on a couch or what have you when you're being guided through meditation, is the purpose of that then to make sure that you are more likely to stay awake?
It is, yeah. I mean, ultimately, if you think about it, you're essentially placing the body in a position that you would like the mind to reflect. So if you want the mind to be relaxed but alert, then it makes a lot of sense to put the body in that position so that the mind will that much. We lie down at night. We lie horizontal. There's a reason for that. It's that the mind recognizes that that's the cue, that's the signal for sleep. So it's really important to put the body in the right position. If you're suffering from back pain or if you have real difficulty sitting upright, then absolutely, I wouldn't use that as a reason not to meditate. Find a comfortable position, even if that is lying down on a bed. But if you're able to, if you're well enough, then for sure you'll get the best results sitting on a chair.
Well, you know, something that just came to mind, you know, if I tell on myself a little bit, you know, in first practicing it a bit, I did it lying down. And not surprisingly, I fell asleep. And, you know, it brought me into the present and quieted the mind and brought down, you know, respirations and heart rate and all of that. And I got very relaxed and I fell asleep. So I guess let me ask this. So ideally, it's to increase alertness but relax at the same time and to be in the present. So I totally get the idea of sitting in a chair to do that. What about, there are a lot of people, and I'm one of those people as well, where there have been a lot of years where I could not, or I should say would not, fall asleep without a television on to shut the mind off. Can you use meditation to replace that when it is time to go to sleep? Is that okay?
It is. What I would encourage people to do, though, is rather than use the same kind of meditation, because if you think about it, if the more often you do that, essentially you're training the mind to get used to using meditation to fall asleep. So then when you try and meditate during the day, the mind's like, oh, okay, here's my signal for going to sleep. And you're more likely to move towards sleep. So I would use, so for example, the 10-minute, the take 10 meditation, I would encourage people to use that solely for use during the day or sort of earlier in the evening. And if you want to use the elements of meditation to help quieten the mind to fall asleep, there's actually a free sleep podcast on the website, on the app that you can use, which is just slightly different because it is quite important that you, as I say, you're not training the mind to fall asleep. Otherwise, the meditation during the day can become quite problematic.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for that. That clears it up for me better, and I know it's going to clear it up for a lot of listeners who might have made the same mistake I did and really try to get themselves in a really relaxed state and end up falling asleep.
Sure.
And then, like you said, kind of training the mind that, hey, when I hear Andy's voice, I go to sleep.
Yeah, so. I get that a lot, Dave, even from my wife, you know.
Yeah.
And it's really important. It's really important, though, Dave. It's not wrong, you know. Like, even if you're sat upright in the right position, many people, when they're learning to meditate, will fall asleep. And don't think for a minute that means that you're doing anything wrong, that you need to change anything. For many people, it's simply a release of residual tiredness. It's the tiredness that we've been carrying around maybe for days, months, even years, just coming to the surface and it's being released. That's a really, really positive thing. For most people, it passes after a few weeks. Any longer than a month, and probably the sort of amount of focus on the breath needs to be increased just slightly to maintain that sense of alertness. But otherwise, really, kind of don't worry too much if you fall asleep once in a while.
Yeah, and kind of just going along with what you were saying, if it would go on maybe longer than a month, there absolutely may be the chance that you just need more sleep.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean, and I don't mean that you should do it during meditation, but I mean in general, perhaps within your lifestyle, maybe you're just simply not getting enough sleep, and that's something that you may need to look at. Obviously, sleep deprivation in our modern society, as crazy busy as everyone is something
yeah.
that is pretty ubiquitous. So it's something that, you know, everyone should be, I don't know about concerned with, but should take a look at. So, all right. Great.
Yeah.
And then you said too, did you say within the app there's a podcast that's actually dedicated more toward the sleep side?
Yeah, in fact, the easiest place to find it, if you go, this is all, you have to forgive me, we're just in the process of changing the whole thing, so my mind is split between the old one and the new one. But in the version that's live right now, if you go online, you'll see there's several sections called Headspace Active and Headspace Extra. And in there, you'll find various podcasts. You'll find podcasts for helping you get to sleep. You'll find podcasts that you can use. So mindful podcast for commuting to work in the morning, for example, or at the end of a busy day, perhaps for cooking, for walking. Again, the emphasis here is not just on how can we get a sense of calm and clarity in those 10 or 15 minutes when we sit and close our eyes, but how can we start to bring a sense of being present to every single moment in our life.
Great, thank you. Well, one of the things that came to mind as you were talking about that is it probably is pretty important that we say not to use the traditional meditation, any part of your traditional meditation while you're driving.
Yeah, well, it's a really, really interesting one, that, because I do you drive yourself, Dave?
Do I drive here, you mean?
Yeah, do you drive?
Yeah, we're in rural America here, so we drive everywhere, yeah.
Right. So have you ever driven, and I ask this question, having done so myself, but have you ever driven along and suddenly you get to, I don't know, a junction or something, and you kind of wake up. I don't mean physically wake up, but you suddenly realize that, oh, I'm here. And you've just driven like the last 2 or 3 miles completely somewhere else in your head. You've been thinking about something else.
Absolutely.
Have you ever had that experience?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. You wake, like you said, it's a waking up of sorts, and you go, I do not remember making any of the turns to get here.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's incredible that we can do that, but it's also really frightening that we can do that.
Right.
Because we're not present, right? We're not being mindful. Our thought, you know, we're distracted by something else. So actually, by bringing the quality of mindfulness to driving, by being more aware of the feeling of the body, the sensation of the hands on the wheel, maybe it's the sounds around us, the smells, things we can see, actually we bring ourselves into the experience of driving, and it actually makes for a far safer driving experience. That's different from meditating while driving, which would be sort of closing your eyes and, you know, that I'm absolutely not suggesting that that's a good idea.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Is there any particular time of day that's best to meditate?
Yeah, you know, we're all different, and I would always encourage people to be flexible in how they use it. If there is only one time of day to do it, then do it then regardless of what I say. But certainly for most people, the best time of day is first thing in the morning. Otherwise, there's this kind of tendency that most of us have to push things down the to-do list. So we kind of say, okay, I'm going to do my meditation at lunchtime. And then lunchtime comes along, too many emails, and so we think, okay, well, I'll do it in my afternoon break. And then maybe we're on the phone to a friend, and before we know it, it's bedtime, and we're lying in bed, and we think, oh no, I didn't do my meditation. Well, maybe I'll do it now, and we fall asleep. If you do it first thing in the morning, it gets done. You get rid of all the grogginess from the night before, and you start the day feeling calm, fresh, and clear about how you would like to live that day. I think it's a really nice time of day to do it.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. Do I need to wear anything special while I'm meditating?
Not unless you'd like to, Dave. No, something relaxing, something comfortable. As a general rule, for women, they probably prefer to take off any high heels. There's something quite nice about having the flats of the feet on the floor. For men, perhaps loosen any ties around the neck if you're living a corporate life. And this is one for everybody. Perhaps you might just like to sort of very discreetly loosen the belt around the middle if it's a little tight, because it's quite important to be able to breathe comfortably.
Good, thank you. And as you know, something I noticed, and I know it's very common, I'd just like to hear what you have to say about it. So we are being guided by you with our app, and we're being guided with meditation, and mm-hmm. the thoughts just keep on coming. You know, we're thinking, I got to pay the cable bill. Oh, I forgot to call that one guy. I've got this to do, that to do. Oh shoot, I've got to do this, and they just keep coming. What do we do with that?
Yeah, well, the first thing to say is that's absolutely normal. You will get days when that's very apparent, when it happens a lot, and other days when the mind's just naturally quieter. The place to begin is so there's practical things you can do, but the place to begin is recognizing that just because you're sitting down doing something called meditation, there is no reason at all that the mind should suddenly stop thinking. And it will usually take a little while to sort of settle down and for those thoughts to slow down. So as much as possible, allow those thoughts to come and go. Not putting up any resistance against them, but just allowing them. The more you do that, the greater sense of space there is in the mind. And actually, ultimately, the quieter the mind becomes. On a practical level, if things pop up during the meditation and you think, oh, no, that's really important, kind of, I really need to remember that, that's a little bit more problematic. I think most of the things in life that are really, really important, if they are really, really important, then there's a pretty good chance we're going to remember them after the meditation. If we're worried that we might forget, then the best kind of way I've found is to try and find, I call it a handle for those thoughts. So you work out what you're going to do after the meditation. Maybe it's you're going to lead cats. So you just picture the front door and the handle on the front door. And it's kind of like, okay, a thought comes in, you think, oh, I really must remember that. Fine. Mentally, you just put it on the handle. So that when you, and then you can let it go and come back to the breath. And it means when you finish your meditation and you get to the front door, you're just reminded of those things that you need to do.
So stay within the meditation and
absolutely
just mindfully, you know, picture the message to yourself being left on the front door.
Yeah, or wherever you're going next. You
or
know,
the
point. Yeah, the point is to not get too sucked into kind of. It's very easy to kind of spend the entire meditation just thinking about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is such a shame, because it's a treat. It should feel like a treat, giving yourself 10 minutes when you don't have to think about stuff. There's no responsibility to do anything. And just giving yourself time and just coming back to those things after the meditation, I think, can make just a huge difference.
And again, I think there's probably a wide variety of responses from people that are doing it, but I suspect that for the people that do have a very busy brain, that in time with practice, if they will give it time, like you said, you give them 10 sessions for free within the app, that within, if they will do all 10 and really stick with it, it will get better and better. I noticed that for me.
Yeah. You know, I always encourage people, I know we're talking about 10 minutes and 10 days, I always encourage people to look at meditation and more broadly the health of their mind as a lifelong pursuit. You know, this isn't a crash diet for the mind. You know, this is, okay, we have the ability to prevent certain things happening to the mind. We have the ability to maintain a healthy mind. We don't think twice about eating the right foods for us. We don't think twice about, well, maybe some people do, but going to the gym or kind of, you know, looking after. There's a recognition, there's the idea that the responsibility at least rests with us, even if we choose not to do those things. The same is true of science. You said it earlier, science is showing again and again that when we take time out, even just 10 minutes a day, there are some really fundamental physiological changes that are experienced in both the brain and the body, which really benefit our health, that increase our immune system, that reduce the amount of harmful chemicals normally associated with stress that are pumping around our body. And so these things, we have them, you know, to use ourselves. Once we learn the skill of meditation, we can use it every day for the rest of our life. And that is the way I would encourage people to think about it rather than a quick fix.
Yeah, that's excellent. That's a great perspective because that's how we are at Leanness Lifestyle University, as well as we look at it as a lifelong endeavor when we're looking to really manage weight for the weight fighter, the person who has struggled with their weight and has not progressed in a manner that they find acceptable for at least a year. That's what we call a weight fighter. And for that person, we are looking at strategies that can really improve their lives rather quickly. However, the processes are those that must be engaged in at some level for life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, one of the things I wanted to ask that popped into my head when you were talking, you know, we've been talking about, you know, 10 days and 10 minutes. That's great. And there are so many, you know, meditation programs out there that run all kinds of different lengths of time. Once we get past 10 minutes and 10 days, is there an eventual ideal?
There is an ideal, yeah. I think the idea of the Headspace journey was to build people up to the ideal. So the ideal and the amount of time that's used in most of the scientific studies is around 20 minutes. So for anybody using the Headspace kind of app or website, you do 10 minutes for 10 days, 15 minutes for 15 days, and then 20 minutes for 20 days. And once you're up to 20 minutes and you feel comfortable with that, then all of the meditation from then on in remain at 20 minutes, which is, in most of the studies, has been shown to sort of be the optimum. I think if you have the time and the inclination and you would like to do more, then that's great. But actually, 20 minutes seems to work very well for most people.
That's excellent. And it's just something I thought of. I'm so glad I asked, because, you know, eventually it's important that people know that this is where we're going. And as you said, it's something we will want to do to improve our minds and to improve how we feel and manage our days and our relationships. And there's just so many benefits to meditation, but it's nice to know what, you know, the ideal is, so that we know, well, you know, some people may feel they have to do this for an hour, or maybe they've heard something, and it's nice to know that we can start with 10 minutes, and we can start with 10 and build up to 20, and we can give ourselves 20 minutes, like you said, what a gift that is.
Absolutely.
Just kind of as a last, you know, thing here, I want to make sure I don't miss anything. Is there a primary complaint or a primary benefit that we haven't talked about that we really need to make sure we mention, either on the complaint side or the benefit side for new users?
In terms of using the app or the website, you mean?
No, not so much, you know, in the functionality, but just in meditation in general.
I think we've both covered quite a few of them. I think falling asleep is at one end of the scale. It is a big one. The other one is it's not working. My mind won't slow down. Okay, well, coming back to the original principles of meditation isn't about trying to stop thoughts. It's about learning how to step back from the thoughts and observe them from a new perspective, how to have a different relationship with the thoughts and feelings in the mind. So I think that's really important to understand right from the outset, because that is probably one of the most common. It's kind of, how was it? Well, it didn't work. I just kept thinking all the time. Mm-hmm. So just remembering that it's not about trying to stop the mind. And the more we learn to step back and observe, the more the mind will naturally unwind. It's so hard to believe how simple the process is. It's almost too simple, actually. Mm-hmm. For most people, it's almost hard to believe that it could be that easy. And it's something alien to most of us. We're normally so invested in our thoughts, so involved in them, that it's not a strange idea to just step back and just to listen or just to observe the thoughts as they come and go. So that would be my biggest tip, if you like.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I've learned so much on this interview, and I know my listeners are going to learn a tremendous amount about meditation, and it's what a fantastic interview. If people want to find out more information about you and Headspace and meditation, what are the best connections, the ways to connect with you and get more information, Andy?
Well, if they like to go to getsomeheadspace.com, then that's our website. And obviously there's tons of information on there. There's a regular blog that we put out. Our Facebook page has daily content in terms of the quotes that you might want to keep on your phone or write down at home. There's a lot of blogs, there's a lot of community conversation about addressing different kind of problems people might be having or the benefits they might be experiencing. And also you might like to check out the HuffPost as well, where I have a column called The Mind Man, where once every couple of weeks there's a blog, which is, I guess, a little more focused towards whatever's kind of going on at that particular time.
So we've got Facebook, we've got getsomeheadspace.com, and we've got the Huffington Post.
You can even follow on Twitter, if you like, Dave. Andy_Headspace.
Okay, great. Well, one of the things I want to mention for now, I know that we had talked prior to the call, you've you've secured the domain headspace.com, but I want to make sure everyone listening for now finds it correctly. And if you do go to the website, go to getsomeheadspace.com. Is that correct?
That's absolutely right.
Yeah, great. Well, Andy, thank you so much for your time today. I know you're extremely busy, and I'm so glad that things are going well. I've thoroughly enjoyed the app, and you know, being, again, not proudly, but being relatively new at meditation,
yeah.
I have found that, and I've tried other guided meditations on audio. I like yours the best of any of the ones I've tried. I know there are a bunch, but I do like yours the best, and I just thank you so much for your time today. And I know that my listeners are going to enjoy your product as well, and I look forward to letting it help them make my job even easier as a wellness coach.
That's great. It's a pleasure, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much, and we'll hopefully speak to you soon. Goodbye.
Look forward to it. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. This is David Greenwald of Leanness Lifestyle University. For more information on programs we offer, visit leannesslifestyle.com. That's LEANNESS lifestyle.com. I look forward to working with you personally and through the wonder of an inside-out transformation, helping you to not only turn your body, but your life around.